This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It has certainly been a challenging few years for nonprofit groups in Michigan. Whether they depended on private donations or corporate donations or both, the Great Recession really hit organizations all over the state. But as our state gradually recovers, so are the nonprofits, especially in certain areas of Michigan. Montgomery Consulting is out with a new survey of fundraising conditions in Michigan. So who's on the rebound and who's still struggling? Michael Montgomery joins us now from Dearborn. So, Michael, what time frame does your survey address?
Well, we were in the field gathering information the second half of January and the first half of February. But we were also asking questions, recall questions, about how organizations did last year. So we asked them to evaluate current conditions, tell us about what they expect for this year, and then also tell us about last year, whether they made their goal, whether they felt last year they did better in 2012 than they had done in 2011.
So looking at Michigan's regions then, Michael Montgomery, where would you say the nonprofits doing the best in terms of meeting their fundraising goals are located?
Well, it's West and Southwest Michigan. Across the state, about 60% of organizations reported that they'd met their 2012 fundraising goals. But in West and Southwest Michigan, that rises to 75%.
And why do you think that is?
Well, I think they're a little ahead of the rest of the state in terms of economic recovery.
So that obviously, as that's going on, the perception is from donors is we can loosen it up a little bit and give more.
Yep, and that also carries over into how the fundraisers and nonprofit leaders saw their local fundraising climate. Not only were the organizations in that area most likely to have met their goal last year, they report that they evaluate current conditions for fundraising more highly than do organizations in other parts of the state.
So West and Southwest, they're pretty well smiling when they're putting their annual reports together and saying in terms of meeting their fundraising goals, who's struggling?
Well, in terms of Central and some area Michigan organizations, they only 59% of them met their goals. And in Metro Detroit, the average dropped down to 53% met their goals last year. In terms of how they look at local fundraising conditions at the current time, some area Michigan organizations were the least enthusiastic. 50% of them said current conditions were good, and 40% said they were not so good. All of the others had majorities saying that conditions were good or excellent, and very small percentages saying not so good. So really, in Central Michigan on up through the Thumb area, that's where organizations were really the least upbeat about their fundraising results last year and their fundraising conditions early this year.
Is it a Flint-Saginaw type of effect? Or
It's Flint-Saginaw. I think it's also the agency serving small towns where they were very dependent on some of the very smallest auto suppliers, the guys that are most likely to be completely out of the new way of doing business.
When the whole strip down had to happen. So yep. What is the takeaway of your research, do you think, Michael Montgomery, for not only the folks who run nonprofits in Michigan, but the people who depend on their services?
Well, I think that what we're looking at is a system where recovery's real, but it's slow. The vast majority expected fundraising this year will be at least as good as last year, 91.5%, but half said they expect it only to be as good as 2012. So a takeaway for the nonprofit leaders is probably if they're looking for a whole lot more economic recovery to just kind of float their boat to higher levels of giving, that may not be a realistic expectation. They may need to change how they do business, how they fundraise, or how they conduct their business to increase revenues or reduce expenses. In terms of the individuals, I think people need to be conscious that this is a system that there's reasons for optimism, but there's also, it's going to continue to be a system under some degree of stress. It's really a mixed outlook for fundraising at the current time.
Montgomery Consulting with the results of its second annual Michigan Fundraising Conditions Survey. This, by the way, is the only regularly scheduled survey that looks and focuses in on fundraising by Michigan nonprofit organizations. And we've been talking with Michael Montgomery. Thanks so much, Michael.
Well, thank you.
Even Even as Mother Nature plays her own little cat and mouse game with us regarding whether or not spring has actually arrived, there is one unimpeachable source telling us that despite the chilly temps and despite the snow showers, spring is here. The birds. No doubt you've heard the welcome sounds of birds chirping in the mornings. That harbinger of warmer weather to come got us wondering, what's the state of Michigan birds? Late last month, some of the state's top conservationists, biologists, and professors came together for a statewide Michigan Bird Conference. The co-chair of this Michigan Bird Conservation Initiative workshop is Kara Haas. Kara is with the Kellogg Bird Sanctuary in Augusta, near Battle Creek. Her mission is all about protecting and restoring bird populations and their habitats in Michigan. Kara Haas joins us now from Augusta. Kara, what success stories can you celebrate in terms of conservation or restoration of bird populations or their habitats?
Yeah, so something that we're tentatively celebrating or looking forward to is the possible delisting of the Kirtland's warbler, which would mean taking it off of the endangered species list. So Kirtland's warbler is a tiny little yellow bird that has very specific nesting wants, and it uses the young jack pine forest that we have up near like Oscoda County, Michigan, and it's a species that needs human management to survive because its habitat was always controlled by forest fire to regenerate those forests, but now with so many humans around, we have to suppress forest fires so we don't have any tragedies or total loss of property. So we have to manage for this species. So something we are talking about is if the Kirtland's warbler is taken off of the endangered species list, its habitat will still need to be managed so that it is so that it survives and it doesn't fall back into decline. And so the Kirtland's Warbler Initiative is being led by Huron Pines, and they're doing a large capital campaign to raise funds to create a plan to do management long-term for that species so that it'll still be here in the Michigan landscape.
Is that because if they're taken off the endangered species list funding, funding is lost?
Yes.
Okay, so it's a mixed blessing to have them off the endangered species list then.
Yes, it is. So, we're trying to be ahead of the game and have plans in place so that we don't take any steps back.
What species are most threatened, Kara, as you kind of look at the Michigan bird population?
The research from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they put out a State of the Birds report every year, and species that use grassland habitat are ones that are doing very poorly, and species that use shorelines. Mm. So any bird that's tied to the water. And a lot of that is just tied to loss of habitat.
We're speaking with Kara Haas, who is with the Kellogg Bird Sanctuary in Augusta, near Battle Creek, about the state of the Michigan bird. And could you give us, from your perspective as a conservationist, Kara, tell us why it is so important to protect endangered birds? In other words, how would Michigan's ecological system be harmed if we lose a species or two? I mean, isn't that just biology, and has that not gone on over the eons?
Sure. We're kind of at, so birds in biodiversity in any ecosystem is of the utmost importance. So having the most native species working together in the ecological community is what makes that community healthy and functioning. So it's like when you're putting together a puzzle. You know, if you're missing all the straight pieces that go on the edge, it's not easy to put together, and it's just not working.
Okay.
And, you know, doesn't make a pretty picture. And so losing a few birds out of an ecosystem could mean that there's a food source in there that goes totally out of whack. You know, maybe you lose a hawk, which is a predator bird, and then your rodent population skyrockets. And then because you have so many rodents, they eat all the seeds, and then there's no flowers to grow because all the seeds got eaten. So every every organism within an ecosystem is important. And birds are often on the highest level, and so the loss of the bird could have a deeper impact because they're such an important species.
Kara Haas is with the Kellogg Bird Sanctuary in Augusta near Battle Creek. Thanks so much for talking with us today on Stateside, Kara.
You're welcome.
This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The Who's Pinball Wizard was an anthem for the baby boom generation who grew up going to arcades where dozens of pinball machines would be lined up. And in these days of Xbox and PS2, yes, there are still pinball wizards of all ages.
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball.
The Michigan Pinball Expo is coming to Oakland University this week. And joining me now is organizer and longtime pinball player, John Cosmo. Welcome to Stateside, John.
Thank you for having me.
So you have been a pinball player since you were 9. You came in second at the Pinball World Championship in 2007. You are married to a fellow pinball enthusiast. What is it that a player gets from playing pinball that just can't happen, let's say, if you're sitting, you know, there with your Xbox?
Pinball's kind of more like a real, it's a three-dimensional device. You're not escaping into a false world. You're playing and you're still in the real world. The ball's real. You know, the things that you're doing are real. You know, the eye-hand coordination, the geometry. Every pinball machine is basically like a new poker game, where in poker you have a few dozen different poker games to learn. Pinball is basically like learning a new course in golf or a new rule set in poker. You know, it's not just checkers, it's chess. There's just a lot of strategy and a lot of skill involved.
And, of course, you can just appreciate aesthetically the art and the design and the sounds and the music of each machine, because each one really does take you on a different trip, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's basically what it is. Each pinball machine has a traditional back glass, and that's kind of like the billboard. And, you know, when you're walking through the arcade and you're walking down Arcade Highway and you look and you see a billboard for, you know, whether it's Avengers or Wizard of Oz or what have you, you know, you're going to walk up to whatever machine interests you and where your interests lie. So, yeah, that's a big part of it. Absolutely is, you know, the artwork and, you know, what themes they pick.
So what's going to happen at the Michigan Pinball Expo over these 4 days?
Wow, there's going to be a lot happening. We're giving away over $20,000 in cash and prizes. We're giving away, courtesy of Able Electronics and Gary Monarch and Jersey Jack Pinball, a brand new Hobbit LE pinball machine, which isn't even built yet. It'll be built, you know, corresponding with the three movies coming out, The Hobbit. And we have just tournaments for every skill level, every age, every gender. We have the Women's Michigan Pinball Championships. We have the Pinball Wizards Pinball Championship for Michigan. We have all our wizard and training tournaments for children on Saturday. And we have even the novice division. So if you've never even played before, you can walk up and still have a chance to win a few $100 playing pinball. We also have vendors that are going to be buying and selling pinball machines. So if you play something that you like, you know, there's probably going to be a price tag on almost everything, and it's for sale. And if you want to take it home, give that opportunity. And then we also have speakers, where we're going to have Jersey Jack from Jersey Jack Pinball, who just made The Wizard of Oz. He'll be speaking at our show. And we'll have some past designers and artists and people that can actually tell you how to fix and maintain your own pinball machine.
And am I correct that you pay at the door, and then there are dozens and dozens of machines that are there to be played as much as you want?
Absolutely. There's no quarters involved here. So unlike a traditional arcade where you walk in and you start dropping quarters on what you want to play,
sure,
you pay a low fee, which at the door would be $15 for kids, $20 for adults, and you can play from 8 in the morning till 12 midnight, and there's no quarters. So every machine will be, you know, at your beck and call, that if you want to just walk up and start playing, you just hit start and you're good to go. And we'll have over 125 pinball machines this year, probably approaching 150, as I'm getting calls every day from people wanting to bring games.
I'm talking with John Cosmo, who's the organizer of the big Michigan Pinball Expo happening coming up at Oakland University this week. And I kind of think, John, as I think back, that the kids who listened to The Who's Tommy in 1969 and, you know, got hooked on Pinball Wizard are literally grandparents today. Do you see a lot of cross-generational action at the Pinball Expo?
Oh, it's huge. Well, pinball's been around since the 1800s. It used to be called Bagatelle. And then, then they started having bingo machines where you can nudge the machines and get them to fall in certain holes. And then in 1947, Humpty Dumpty came down the line at Gottlieb, and it had six flippers. Flippers were first introduced at that time.
Hmm.
And ever since 47. So, I mean, you can imagine being a teenager in 47, you know, that covers a wide range from being a teenager in 47 to being a teenager in 2013. So everybody pretty much on the planet has seen or played or been around, you know, while pinball's been out and about. There's just tons of great things about it, and it crosses all ages and all genders. It's just a fun, family-friendly game that just is a lot of good times.
And this is a very family-friendly expo.
It's super family-friendly. We have stools there for kids, so if you have kids that are sub 3 foot tall, they can hop up on a stool and play a game. You know, we have everyone from grandchildren to grandparents there. Actually, a quick story, parents bring their kids to go up and play, and the kids are all like, we don't want to do this, blah, blah, blah. They come down like 3 or 4 hours later, and the kids are kicking and screaming that they don't want to leave. And then a couple hours later, we'll see the same parents back. We'll be like, hey, weren't you just here? Like, yeah, we want to take our kids back home. We left them with the sitter. Now we want to have some time to play ourselves.
For someone who's never played pinball, John, can you give us a sense and describe what it's like to really be in the moment and really have a great pinball session?
It's really like when you get in the zone in pinball, you really feel like you're the luckiest person on the planet because you just feel like the ball's never going to go out. You're hitting every shot you want to hit. You're maximizing your scores. You're maximizing your bonus. The machine's just doing everything that it was programmed to do, and you're making it happen just based off skill with your eye-hand coordination and just, you know, having a great time doing it. You know, when you get these games teed up and maxed out for everything that they're worth, I mean, it's a great light show. The programmers do a great job with the choreography, connecting whatever game it is you're playing with the playing experience. So if you're playing Avengers or Wizard of Oz, you feel like you're walking down the yellow brick road. You feel like you're in the tornado. You feel like the witch is chasing you. They do a great job at, you know, helping you sink into these games, and every game's like its own little universe. So if you're playing one of these themed games, you feel like you're part of the story, whether it's Lord of the Rings, Avengers, Batman, Spider-Man, you feel like you're there, and it's a great escape.
The Michigan Pinball Expo runs from April 4th through the 7th at Oakland University, and you can get all the details at their website. It's mipinball.com. That's mipinball.com. And we've been talking with organizer John Cosmo. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you for having me. We really appreciate you guys covering us.
Coming up next, GM's North America chief financial officer promises the company will restyle their vehicles. We talk with two leading auto analysts to learn what this really means for consumers and for GM. This is Stateside on Michigan Radio.